For centuries, man has been on top of the food chain. Until now.
They're here! They're coming! God, no!
So you don't understand that we're dealing with a highly intelligent beast.
What is it about those little furry bodies that's so frightening?
Science has agreed that unless something is done and done quickly, man as the dominant species of life on Earth will be extinct within a year. Nature, mad, rampant.
Oh, no, not the bees! Not the bees! Ah! Oh, no, my eyes!
The next victim could be you.
Welcome to the food chain, where nature runs amok, animals attack, and mankind is the main course. Not sure what the appetizer would be. I guess it depends on the animal. Bugs, maybe? They're so crunchy, though. All those wings and legs. Bugs would be like peanuts or sunflower seeds, you know, just like a light snack before chowing down on a park ranger. I've got a friend who eats bugs. Well, not all the time, but she did eat a cricket taco. Oh, shit. What if the rest of the crickets know that she ate some of their brothers and sisters and are all waiting for the right time to pounce? Do you know how long it would take for crickets to eat you? You would have to decide that you wanted them to do it. Like this weird soft suicide. Yeah, she was eaten by crickets. Took a month. Oh, well. I'm Cootie, and joining me, as always, is my lovely assistant, X.
I was hungry. I am no longer hungry.
You know, cricket tacos sound dirty.
You gotta wash the crickets first.
Yeah, good point. Well, let's find out if crickets are going to be involved in this episode's movie as we consult the dartboard of decision. I've written the names of some animals on the backs of old Danielle Steel paperbacks and nailed them to a telephone pole. X is going to throw a dart, and whichever animal name the dart pierces is going to be the subject for tonight's movie.
This gets weirder every show.
No, this is normal. People do this.
It seems like an ineffective way to make a choice.
Contrary, this is one of the 7 habits of highly effective people.
Highly effective at what?
Just throw the fucking dart.
All right, what did I hit?
Looks like the subject for this episode's movie is frogs.
Contrary to popular opinion, frogs aren't just selective eaters, feasting only on flies. Take the bullfrog, for example. They'll eat spiders, scorpions, rodents, snakes, fish, and just about anything else that passes in front of them. But how do they manage to be such eating machines?
Now let's find out why the frogs are freaked out. Cootie, please spin the wheel of mutation!
And the wheel says, pesticides!
Pesticides, pesticides have screwed up my insides. What am I gonna do? In 1962, Rachel Carson warned about the silent spring. All this time we haven't learned a thing.
Well, on this episode, we're gonna take a quick trip to the bayou for one of my favorite bad animal movies of all time, Frogs, starring a mustache-free Sam Elliott and the Welsh James Mason, Ray Milland.
Our special animal expert on this week's show will be a familiar voice to anybody who listens to our other podcast, Kiss the Goat. He is the popular and sometimes controversial chef, operator of the Picnic Restaurant in Nova Scotia, and close personal friend of ours, Alan McPherson. Welcome to the Food Chain, Chef Al.
It's an honor and a terror to be a part of the Food Chain.
That's the way it should be.
That's right. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it's 1972's Frogs.
Bad movies. The world is full of them. From low-budget crap fests to downright unwatchable. And only two men are willing to watch them all. So climb in and take your seat. This is Short Bus Cinema.
Let's do it.
Hey everyone, this is Johnny Krug from Kruger Nation.
And this is Rick Morgan from the Hell Ming Power Hour.
We have decided to team up and take you where no one has gone before.
We're on a quest to find the world's worst movie, and we're doing it on the bus.
Driving through cult classics in every genre to find the holy grail of bad movies.
So if you're looking for something different and more fun than you can stand, then climb on in.
Short Bus Cinema is a proud member of Legion Podcasts.
That's right, yo!
Short Bus Cinema. We love to watch the movies you hate.
It's Old Home Week on the Food Chain with our special animal expert, Chef Al McPherson, and we're about to break down the movie Frogs from 1972.
Suppose nature gave a war and everybody came. The snakes, the birds, the lizards and frogs. And suppose that the polluters, the species on Earth called man, were the enemy in that war.
I still believe man is master of the world.
And then, suppose that the human race lost. Ray Milland, Sam Elliott, Joan Van Ark, Adam Rourke, Judy Pace.
First of all, we're going to have to try to find our Stuart and Michael. To be very honest with you, I don't think we will. Not alive, anyway.
You talking big because you're the only one making any sense around here.
But whether we find him or not, we've got to get off this damn island. All of us, now!
And I am asking to get the hell out of here with someone or by myself.
So what do you think, Al? Will it take longer to take apart an actual frog or this movie?
This movie could be delved into a lot more than a frog.
Not much to a frog, is there?
No, but frogs are one of those ones that I actually have a bit of a moral issue with. I like frog legs, but I have a bit of a thing about serving them because the way they're harvested is kind of nasty. So, they kind of have, their skin is elastic. I don't know. You've seen the reflecting skin?
I have not.
Sticking things in frogs and making them blow up. Their skin has this like tensile strength thing that it's pretty like rubber or like latex, I guess, balloon-ish. So, yeah, they actually skin them alive before they cut their legs off so that they're servable.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty gross. It's pretty gross. Like French chefs that I studied under had no problem with serving anything, except you get this like squeamish little look on their face when they were preparing frog legs because it's a little rough. But so that said, no, I think there's a lot to dig into this film.
I gotta agree. Like I said, it's one of mine and X's favorites.
I got this horrible image of Howie Mandel trying to shove a frog over the top of his head and blow it up like a surgical glove.
You ain't right.
That's, well,
what do you do?
I don't know what to tell you.
You do the frog toosie.
Oh God! All right, let's Jesus, let's rip into this. Sam Elliott is very young and has no mustache, and he is paddling around. They say it's a lake. I guess it's more of a swamp.
You know, I just have to say, before we get started, I love Sam Elliott. I've loved him for years and years. But I think that he's just one of those people that as he's gotten older, he's gotten better looking. And that fucking mustache does it for him. Without the mustache, it's kind of like, well, he just looked like every other schmuck from the 70s.
He looks like James Taylor.
James Taylor.
He does.
I was going to say he was like trying to, almost in this film, he's almost like trying to coax the mustache in through an exaggerated use of denim. It's like that denim at some point converted itself to facial hair. I don't know, but
I'm okay with that. Trade in the denim, get the facial hair.
It was better than some of the corduroy that was being rocked in there. Like,
oh,
holy
God.
Smokes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's paddling.
I am detecting a pattern when you guys invite me on to talk about stuff. It usually involves like pretty wonky 70s fashion and frogs. That seems to be a reoccurring theme between this and Psychomania.
I'm sorry.
Is there a problem with that?
No, I'm the only problem is I'm trying to like link the films. Like that they're somehow set in the same universe. That the events of one somehow set off the events of the other. But, you know, I can work through that. I'm strong.
So, like, the toad god from Psychomania is actually the one who gathered the frogs and taught them to attack.
Maybe when spiritual biker guys got turned into stone that freed their spirits and it was released into amphibioid creatures across the world and they're just wreaking havoc.
Wow. That's deep. That's very deep.
Deep is a four-letter word.
I don't know, man. Oh, that's going to be in the back of my head throughout the entire show now. You realize that?
Well, good. Because you did this to me, so just keep that in mind.
Ah, karma.
All right, so we have Sam Elliott.
Karma's a good segue.
Oh, God. He's in a canoe. He's in the swamp. He's taking pictures of animals and also all this kind of, like, shit that's in the swamp, just like pollution and garbage and a headless baby doll for some reason.
Because it's creepy.
Because it is creepy. And while he's paddling about, there's this asshole in a speedboat. And he thinks it will be funny to knock Sam Elliott's canoe over with his speedboat. So the question, of course, is who let this guy drive a speedboat? But he's also got Joan Van Ark in the boat with him. And really, who let her wear that turban? Because it looks like it's made out of stewardesses.
Made out of stewardesses. That's really, that's good.
That is very strong.
Yeah.
Anyway, they knock him over, and then they pick him up. Oh, sorry, we were just having a laugh. Ha ha ha. Sam Elliott's not amused. And it's at this point that we realize that Sam Elliott's character's name is Pickett Smith.
Pickett.
Not just his name, but also the name of his organic jug band.
With a name like that, you're either the baddest guy in town or you're the town drunk.
Precisely.
Right? It's kind of enigmatic. Like, you're the person everyone takes the most seriously, or you're just, like, a shameful joke.
Go let Pickett out of holding cell number two, Barney.
Sounds right.
So anyway, the asshole who ran him over, his name is Clint Crockett, and I can't say Clint real well, so if I end up calling him Clint at some time during the show, that's just going to happen.
Well, Clint Crockett, just in general, that's way too many C sounds. Clint Crockett.
Well, and his sister's Joan Van Ark with the band Turban, her name's Karen. So Clint and Karen Crockett. It's just difficult to say. So they take him back to their palatial swampside estate, and I'm assuming it's Louisiana.
Well, and I was thinking about that this last time we watched it, because it was filmed in Florida, but I can't remember if there's anything in the storyline that tells us, yeah, this is a Louisiana estate.
So from a perspective of someone who's like completely geographically outside, this just came off as like geography, no man's land. I got the sense of like a bunch of different ecosystems like working, not necessarily in tandem, but like roughly around each other. So it does my heart good to know that you have an impression as to where it actually may be occurring in the world. Because I got a sense of like a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and was pretty impressed that these things could be existing in the same place and time. So I'll take Louisiana.
All right.
That's our guess. I don't think they really actually mention Louisiana, but when we think
it's
of...
like every swamp USA.
Yeah, it really is. It's like
I think it was the...
multi-swamp.
I think it was the accent of, like, the patriarch of the family, the guy in the wheelchair. I think his accent and just kind of their, you know, big sprawling, like, southern estate with the black servants kind of put me in mind of, like, Louisiana or Mississippi, rather Florida.
Right. Yeah, it's circling that Southern Gothic kind of thing in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the second time I've interrupted you, X.
it's okay. This is a conversation. It's fine to interrupt. But yeah, speaking of the guy in the wheelchair, the patriarch of the family, that is Jason Crockett, and he is played by Ray Milland, and he's crusty.
Oh, that's one way to put it.
He's a crusty Crockett.
He's a cranky crusty Crockett.
Of the crusty cranky Crockett clan. Yes.
Say that five times fast.
Yeah, no. It's the 4th of July weekend, and it's Jason's birthday. He was literally born on the 4th of July, which cracks me up.
How American.
Right? So anyway, they bring Pickett Smith back to the Crockett compound. I'm going to keep doing this, just because it's way fun.
It is, I love it.
Jason's kind of he doesn't like all of the bugs and everything that's around his house, so it makes sense that he would live in the fucking swamp, because it seems like he should have accounted for that. So he's spraying a lot of pesticides. He actually sends one of his servants named Grover out to spray some stuff to get rid of all the creepy critters. But after he changes clothes, Jason sends Pickett out to look for Grover without telling anybody else in the family, which is a strange kind of request to make of somebody. But I guess if he's eating your food and drinking your booze, you can go look for a manservant. Anyway, Grover's dead. And he's real dead. He's been bitten to death by snakes, it looks like, because his face is all kind of swollen and kind of veiny.
Yeah, this is, we really start setting the scene even before he finds Grover's body, like face down in this puddle of water, surrounded and covered with snakes. Because, you know, the old guy starts talking about how he's just so superbly inconvenienced by the wildlife around the area, and you know, everybody's complaining about the frogs croaking. Oh, the frogs, we can't sleep, the frogs. And so you're really kind of getting the setup of how nature is just starting to encroach on this big, you know, rich white people's holiday area here.
Yeah, they're very bothered by nature, and again, this is something that we were talking about earlier, how in this movie it's really interesting how the people in this movie just despise everything around them. It's like, I don't know why they didn't just go ahead and blacktop the backyard, you know, because to hell with this grass.
But also there's not a lot of love in this family either. There's very much this sense of like they're just putting up with each other and doing what they do because, well, it's flat out said that's just the way we've always done it, and it's going to be the same thing every year. And any kind of plot twist to that seems to be highly resented, without getting like super emotional about it. It's just like, oh, here's a thing we have to deal with, we'll throw some gasoline on it or throw some poison on it or browbeat a person who seems to be, you know, objecting to how we do things.
Yeah, you're right. And they spend a lot of time talking about, oh, I'm gonna have a drink, do you want a drink, let's have a drink, let's get drinks. It's like
yeah, while making fun of people for drinking too much.
I know. They're constantly talking about Clint drinking all the time, and
yeah,
same time he's drinking beer, I guess, so that's why. Like,
they're, I guess, all, if he drank gin.
Yeah, they're drinking.
That would have been cool.
Well, at one point,
he's the only one drink.
No, because at one point they say he drinks a fifth of vodka a night just to go to sleep.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of impressive. Yeah. I mean, good on him.
Self-medication, that's okay.
Right. So anyway, we've got this whole kind of nasty ass family of people. We've met Clint and Karen, the people on the boat. We've met Jason, who's wheelchair bound and angry at everybody all the time. We've got like this interracial couple that shows up, and that's interesting because they never come right out and talk about the fact that they're interracial couple. Just like they just really kind of beat around that bush. It's like, we sure surprised old Jason. And the guy's like, that's just because you're so cool and with it. And
because you're a model.
Because you're a model. And it's not like, no, you are the blackest thing in this family right now. They do not know what to
it's
do with you.
It's great how no one actually says anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's hanging over everything. And it's great how she kind of uses that. Like, she knows that her presence is creating a sense of discomfort, and she knows that she's got a bit of power because of that. And she was, like, one of the most pleasant surprise characters in this thing.
Yes.
And she's beautiful. Like, I mean, obviously, she's a model, but it's just, like, everything about her is so perfect. Like, her hair, her clothes, she's just, like, this bit of like modern elegance and beauty in the middle of this kind of old-fashioned swampy place. So she's a very interesting character. Yeah.
Indeed, and she's also like seems very comfortable in her own skin too.
Yeah.
Like, as much as you say she's extremely glamorous, but she's also very casual about it. It's a really interesting like contrast to how everyone. There are so many airs being put on.
Yeah. Not to mention she's very self-possessed, whereas everyone around her is kind of doting on, you know, the grandfather and just kind of doing things out of obligation. She's there because she wants to be. She's there with her boyfriend, and she's like, her attitude through the whole thing is, I do what I want.
Yeah. And even her boyfriend, who's, you know, is pretty ineffectual in the whole thing, you get the sense that he loves the fact that she's there.
Yeah.
And is just creating this like sense of disruption. Like, to me that seems to be his whole manner of satisfaction. It's just that he knows he's stirring the pot a little bit just by her presence, and he knows that no one there is going to say anything directly about it. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
And she's in direct contrast to the black servant staff, who is still anachronistically there at this compound during the 70s. So that's an interesting comparison also, the glamorous model compared to, you know, poor Maybelle, who's in the kitchen making coffee. So I always thought I think that's interesting too, because, you know, that's not even you can't do that anymore. So here's this whole big unhappy family. Everybody's got their thing. There's the dotty old woman named Iris who likes to catch butterflies. There's some bratty kids running around. And the first person, I guess besides Grover, who really buys it in an amazingly dramatic way is this dude named Michael. And Michael goes out to check on a telephone line because, of course, he is the phone company. I don't know. These people don't, you know. The telephone line's down. You go climb the pole and fix it. So he shoots himself in the leg.
And I don't even know how
to a great start.
Yeah.
I don't know how he did that, but he shot himself in the leg, and he.
Huh? It wasn't even a handgun.
It was a rifle.
A handgun. He's got a fucking rifle. Yeah, I think you've got to be some special sort of clumsy to shoot yourself. And it wasn't even. Didn't he shoot himself like just right below the knee? Like you almost have to reach your arm out and point back towards your leg in order to do that.
So he falls down, and when he falls down, for some reason, Spanish moss just starts falling from the trees and covering him. So I don't know if this was some kind of sentient fungus. Was the Spanish moss mad at him also? I don't know.
But it was pretty aggressive.
It was, yeah.
And then the tarantulas start coming down. So he's getting attacked by moss and tarantulas, and he can't move, and you never actually see a tarantula, like, bite him or anything. They just kind of...
Lots of close-ups.
Yeah, just lots of close-ups of him, so... I think, really, he just screamed himself to death, because I don't...
He could have had bad allergies. Did the Spanish moss have, like, triggered something?
Potentially true. That's all I can think of, because that's one thing I love about this movie. It's called Frogs, and it's all about animals who attack people, but there aren't that many animal attacks. These people are just so clumsy and awkward in nature that they put themselves in terrible situations which make them die.
Well, even regardless of, like, the Spanish moss, like, this guy just, like, shot himself in the leg inexplicably in the middle of a swamp, the outcome would have been probably similar.
I gotta think you're right.
Yeah. I mean, sepsis at least would have been an issue here.
He might have bled to death. He could have hit an artery. We don't know.
I loved how the Spanish moss went all, like, Suspiria barbed wire on him.
It did, yeah.
Like, it was... the way he was reacting to that was... it's like it was cutting into him and crawling up his butthole or something. I don't know if it was a flub. I didn't go back and check, but there was a scene in this bit where it almost looked like the actor, like, adjusted his pants while this was happening. I don't know if I'm crazy on that, but I thought I saw a little bit of a rummage. You know, like, doing something with his belt.
It's like, oh, I fell on one of my testicles. I gotta adjust this. Hang on.
Yeah, it's like a wedgie. Ah.
There's a spider on my junk. Cut.
I don't know, but I kind of love how, like, the only animals or things that you see... throughout most of this movie that are actually indigenous to that area is, like, the Spanish moss, okay, There's some gators. Okay, you kind of see those in the distance. And maybe a couple of the water snakes, but I'm not, like, that good at identifying the water snakes. Everything else, you've got, like, fucking ball pythons and boa constrictors and tarantulas and desert, fucking desert lizards. I'm like, where the hell did all these animals come from?
Well, I guess that's a nod to the Florida filming, I guess, like, in the opening bit where we're getting the title sequence and that he's taking photographs. And, you know, every time the shutter goes, you get some of the credits come up. You get a bit of a bunch of herons.
Yeah.
Or pelicans, I believe. And it's like, I was really waiting for those guys to get in on the action. I would have loved to have seen, like, a pelican come down and, like, swoop down and, like, suck up one of the little kids that was running around.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so at this point, Iris has seen a butterfly that she wants to capture. She actually gives the Latin name. I think it's I wrote it down. The Papiloglaucus. So it's the glaucoma butterfly, and she wants to go capture that.
It's important to note right here, too, that so far nobody in the family, except for Pickett and Jason, know that anybody has died. Like, nobody knows that Grover's dead, except for those two. And nobody knows that the other guy, what'd you say his name was?
Michael.
The one that just got killed by... Yeah, Michael, who just got killed by Spanish Moss.
Right.
Nobody knows they're dead yet. So everybody's just happily, obliviously being annoyed at this family holiday and going about their own business.
So, old woman's out chasing a butterfly, which, you know, literally she's hunting this one butterfly for like 45 minutes. You know what? Fucking, it's gone. Give up.
She's not good at it.
You're not going to catch this one butterfly that you saw. She sends her son off into the greenhouse to get flowers for, like, a centerpiece. And while he's in the greenhouse, this is when the lizards come in. And this is every kind of lizard you can think of, like salamanders, those ones with the weird little chubby... suction.
Oh, there's monitor lizards. There's everything.
Like a Komodo dragon, I think, shows up. Just everything. And they
come in order of size.
They do!
Which is great. It's like a high school photo op. Like, they have, like, one guy, oh, he's pretty big. Oh, no, another guy who's somewhat bigger literally walks over the other guy. It's tremendous.
But they don't kill him by biting him or eating him or anything.
No. They knock over, like, all these bottles of poison and pesticides that are in the greenhouse.
Typical greenhouse stuff.
Yeah. Just poison so lethal that when you combine them, they form a white poison fog that just envelops.
Including a jar that's literally labeled poison.
Yes.
It's just for our edification, that's all.
And it's a lucky break that, you know, lizards don't respirate.
Right? I was just thinking that, because the lizards don't die. Just this.
No, they're cool.
Just this poor schmuck.
I have a friend, a guy who used to work for me, actually, who had a large collection of lizards. And I've been over to his place a few times. And so, honestly, I hate to, I'm not trying to be a schmuck, but I found this scene so heartwarming because it reminded me of Wayne's pantheon of little lizards and bearded dragon creatures and geckos and things that used to crawl all over me and act goofy and stuff. And it was just like, it was aww, like old home week because they're kind of cute.
They are cute.
They have
love
little
lizards.
Mischievous faces and...
It's like you can't get mad.
So I kind of like that's how we took them out. Like, just by being kind of, like, mischievous. Like, ooh, I'm just going to knock this over. You know?
Wah, wah, wah. So, he dies bad. His mother, the butterfly hunter, she is terrible. She is terrible in the forest. She doesn't understand anything. So she wanders off the path, and soon she's, like, met by snakes hanging from trees and all she does is scream and just whirl around in a circle until she can find her footing again, and then she runs into more animals, just snakes and snakes and snakes. She falls into a puddle and comes up with leeches all over her. So, and she's just like, just this great noise. So she starts picking leeches off of herself, then she gets back up and starts running again, and falls again, basically right onto a rattlesnake. And the rattlesnake bites her, and that's how she dies. And that's, it's just really funny, because it takes like 20 minutes. It's like, yeah, the...
Can I have a sidebar on this?
Yes.
Yeah.
My word of the day for this scene is disproportionality. In terms of the horrible people that are in this, she's kind of just this, like, doughty old, you know, borderline senile lady. But, man, does she get, like, Eli Roth levels of sadism in terms of...
She does.
...getting taken out. Like, of all of these guys, like, she's probably the most innocuous. And, man, does she get put to the ringer before getting taken out.
And I don't know, what kind of venom that snake had, but it made her skin turn green, like, immediately. It's like she fell down, and she was just already decomposing.
Yeah. No, there's, like, some high-test bleach or something in those poison glands. Like, very impressive.
It's almost like she got over-chlorophylled. Oh my god. So Pickett at this point is like, you know what? We should get the hell off this island. And Jason in his wheelchair is like, no, nothing's going to ruin our holiday. We do this every year. This is the special time that I have with my family. Oh, and by the way, our family owns a shit ton of paper mills. And they're making us put some kind of pollution control thing on all of our factories, and that's going to cut into our dividends, and blah, blah, blah. So these are just terrible people all the way around. Paper mills polluting the environment, pesticides everywhere, and not a lick of sense between any of them. How else do these... And really, what this movie is it's just waiting for people to die. It's waiting for...
It really, yeah, at this point, that's what we're into.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we kind of need
because
it.
Next... Yeah, we really do.
Yeah.
Because after she dies, then her husband... ends up wrestling gators in the swamp.
Oh, okay. A quick moment on this guy. His fancy pants, Senior Benjamin. He even drops the delightful.
He does.
That's kind of his role. He's like their groundskeeper thug guy.
Yes. That's
it's astounding. But he does pretty well with that gator, man. Like, I was actually...
He does. Yeah.
He's got him in a rear naked choke and rolling him around until the backup comes. I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, pretty much. He loses when the croc puts him in the death roll, though. And then he passed. That's a submission move. He had to tap out.
No, that's like the Hogan big boot. Like,
right. Flump.
You're not getting up for that.
That match is over. And it really, in scenes like this, it becomes really obvious that the frogs are really just supervisors here. They're not really doing anything. They're just letting all the other, like, amphibians and reptiles do the work while they kind of hang back and watch. I guess they're teamsters. But a lot of times when you see the frogs, they're fucking. They are straight up,
yeah,
one on top of the other. They are mating. So I guess this is just how frogs get off.
Watching humans die.
Yes.
If that was acknowledged, that would put a whole other disturbing wrinkle into this.
It'd be like a Serbian frog. Just terrible.
Frogs on horse Viagra. Yeah. Well, they were trying whatever they could to kill them, right? Like, maybe they came up with some chemical cocktail that was a bad idea.
At this point, and now this is the part that made me happy for a minute, because it's at this point that all the black people in the island are like, fuck this, we are leaving.
Yes.
And it's the smartest possible thing to do. And they should have done it like a day before any of this happened, but just like, no, we're done. So Clint puts them in his boat and takes them to the mainland, essentially. And there's this weird little, like, not really a marina, but it's like a grocery store right there on the water. And it's completely abandoned, but you can tell that it used to be inhabited by the southern redneck variety of person, because there are like open cans of Budweiser laying around, and I think, isn't that Spam on the grill?
Yeah, it kind of looked like discarded Coolerville.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like we just got done watching like a Skinner show, but we decided not to clean up after ourselves. But even then, that's when like there are gulls, and the gulls even seem pissed off. So even the birds are angry at this point, you know. So,
well, if you're gonna bring in vegetation, you might as well bring in the birds too.
Yeah, might as well. So once the black people get onto the shore, the servants and the model, they all bugger off. Clint wants to get back on his boat, but he can't because I guess it's one of the lizards chewed through the rope. Because there were lizards all over that little dock thing, and his boat is out in the middle of the swamp now, and he has to swim to get to it. And this is another situation where you don't really see precisely what kills him. We think it's a snake, but we never actually see the snake attack him. He gets to the boat, and he screams, and he raises up his left hand, and it's covered with blood, and that's it. Just, blah! And then he just sinks into the water. So, I don't know. I guess
poor old Clint.
Right? So, I guess it was a snake.
The human
I don't know.
Embodiment of, like, a Bruce Springsteen, early Bruce Springsteen song. Like, is just, like, living in his glory days, and you know,
yeah.
He knows it's all screwed up. And
I like that early scene where he's showing Pickett his trophy, like some football trophy, and he goes, "Yep, I haven't gained a pound since I got this. I'm the same weight, same weight as I was." And I'm like, "Are you the same weight as that trophy? Because that again, that doesn't seem right."
Hey, he's talking about high school too, so it's kind of pitiful.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, it's like. It's not only the same weight, it's like the same like mental growth.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
You know, it's...
So, and this, the next part's one of my favorite parts, and again, it's all off screen, but Clint's wife is kind of watching him do what he's doing on the boat, so she sees him swim back towards the boat, and then realizes that he never gets back in it. So she's freaked out. She kind of steps off the shore, screaming his name. She gets her foot stuck in the mud, and then she's killed by a snapping turtle.
Very slowly.
It's...
Yeah.
Serious. I mean, how the fuck do you not get away from a turtle?
It's 5 minutes. It's 5 minutes of cutting back and forth between just the top of this turtle floating along in the water towards her and her screaming and frantically trying to pull her foot out of the mud. So back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And then, you know, she falls over, presumably killed by this turtle.
No, it's one of the few bits in this where I wish it could have gone a little bit gorier.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've seen snapping turtles, and I've seen demos of, like, what you have to do to hunt them and get them, and they're one of the most dangerous creatures in the world. Like, they, if you don't snag one correctly, they will take your hand off, like, in a second. I would have liked to have, I don't know, if they had been able to get, like, some of that sense of Assyria across.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, a snapping turtle's not like. I don't think that actually was a snapping turtle.
Really? It had kind of that weird beaky looking appendage on its little turtley face.
It seemed really big.
Yeah, it was...
like the snapping turtles that I've seen are like they move pretty fast, and they're kind of wriggly. And this guy seemed, I don't know, pretty chill. I mean, they probably Marlon Perkins at it. All the hell.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't know what kind of turtle it was.
But I mean, really, what would a snapping turtle? I mean, it might take out a hamstring. But
yeah,
I don't know. I guess I don't see these animals, with the exception of the crocodile that Stewart had to wrestle. I don't see these animals really like devouring a human being. You know.
Well, in fairness to this, to the turtle, he did bring in his crab friends for backup.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, my God.
It was a team effort. I did like how they all, like, took their turns.
Very courteous to each other.
Right,
yeah,
right.
It was quite the masterful plan that way.
So at this point, pretty much...
everyone get their legs in. It's good.
Right. And everyone's dead, pretty much, by this point, except for Pickett and Clint's sister and the two kids. There are two kids running around. So they all decide to get the hell off the island in Pickett's canoe, which... when did they go back and get that?
Oh, they towed it with...
oh, Clint's did they tow
boat,
it?
They?
Okay. I didn't...
yeah, they towed it back to shore when... but they left the crusty old man there because he refused to leave.
Well, you can't really get a wheelchair into a canoe.
Well, they could have taken him out of the fucking wheelchair, but he refused to go with him.
Yeah, that's true. He didn't want to go. And he was making...
he could go to bed by himself.
Yeah. And he was making fun of everybody else for leaving. Just like, you're cowards. I thought you were better than this. You've disgraced the family and all this other shit. Anyway, and it's like, who cares? You're going to die. We're going to leave. What Sam Elliott takes his shirt off for some reason, which makes this scene worth remembering, apparently. But he fights off snakes and he grabs this one snake with both hands and just raises it above his head like it's fucking Simba, throws it back into the water, and he shoots an alligator just because it was nearby. So now he's become the thing that he hates. Now he is destroying the animals and doesn't care.
Yeah, can I put a pin in that? Pickett is very much, you know, the environmentalist agitator journo type. Up until the point where it's like, oh, geez, there's a hell of a lot of frogs surrounding the house. Do you guys have any gasoline anywhere?
Yeah, right.
And then it's like the moment his ass is on the line, it's like, fuck this shit. I'm just going to take you motherfuckers out. Like, it didn't take long for that worm to turn, did it?
Enough Ranger Rick in this shit. We're done. Burn it. Burn it all down. So anyway, blah, blah, blah.
In spring, I'm down.
Yeah, right. Kill it. So they make it ashore, and... as they're going towards the road into town, we see all the baggage that the model and the servants had, and it's just kind of thrown everywhere. So you kind of get the impression that they're dead, but I don't know if that's actually true, because they could have been just clumsy. You know, just, shit, I dropped my suitcase and all my stuff's everywhere. Fuck it, it's too heavy anyway. I'll get more stuff when I get to town. So I like to think they survived. I like to think that they did the smart thing and they lived.
I would like to think that, too. The birds that were besetting them, you said, were they gulls?
I think they were.
I think they were.
Yeah, they were making gull sounds.
Right, okay. I had this little metaphorical fear in my heart that they were eagles.
Oh, gosh.
And that would have, like, messed me up because of, like, all of the 4th of July stuff that was, like, kind of being lampooned. But if it was like the escaping black people were beset upon by eagles, that would have like flipped that and made me feel kind of queasy.
Man.
But if we can go with gulls, I'm totally cool with that.
That's
pretty sure it was Bills.
Wow. That would have been really heavy-handed. I would have not known how to react to that, if I'm honest. I probably would have.
Yeah.
I would have laughed eventually.
I'm going with the Gulls.
Okay. That's what we're doing. Now, here's one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie. They reach the road, okay, and they flag down this woman driving a station wagon with her kid. And they all four get into the car, and the woman says nothing about the fact that Sam Elliott is carrying a fucking rifle. Please come into my car, stranger with a gun. Meet my child. His name is Billy.
It's better than that, because he's the one who flags down the car by himself. And when she stops, he waves the other three in. And then there's this disheveled woman and these two children. One of the children's who's holding a gun until he takes the gun from him. And they all jump in the back seat. Everything's cool.
This is why
it was a simpler time.
This is why I missed the 70s. You could do shit like that. It was totally fine.
At that point, I was thinking, this is turning into a different type of horror film. Like, is David Hess going to show up at this point? And
the last station wagon on the left. Meanwhile, mom's drunk. She's got a fucking fifth of whiskey in the console. Billy's not wearing his seatbelt. He's playing with lawn darts. Just totally safety third. So the kid in the station wagon has this gigantic frog. And he's just like, look at this frog. You ever seen one so big? And obviously, no, they haven't. And the woman says, we haven't seen anybody on this road for 2 hours. So obviously something terrible has happened outside of the compound. We never really get a good glimpse of that. But what we do see is Jason back in his house all by himself except for the dog. And the frogs have now become so aggressive that they're jumping through the window of his house. So the frogs have come for Jason. But again, the question...
One of them's the DJ and doing like a little remix on his turntable.
Yeah, that's right. Brr. So the question really is, what are they going to do? I mean, it's fine for them to jump into the house through the windows and attack, but really, how are they going to kill him? This is like, you know, the coyote finally chasing the roadrunner. Or finally catching the roadrunner. I mean, it's just like, there's nothing they can do with him except, you know, jump.
Croak at him.
Yeah, just croak at him. You know, jump on his colostomy bag. I don't know. I don't know how this works.
Sit on him. They could get like 20,000 frogs to sit on his chest.
Oh, yeah. You know? Slowly suffocate him. Under the weight of all their amphibiousness.
Maybe they have Spanish moss.
Trick him into licking them.
You'll just die by warts. No, wait, that's toads, isn't it? That's toads.
Never mind.
It's in this scene that I realized that this story is actually the Irish Setter story.
Oh, it's Colonel's story?
It's all about Colonel. It's like, Colonel has the big character moment right there. It's like, am I going to be a loyal house pet? I've listened to this guy the whole time. He tells me to shut up. I shut up. But at the same time, I'm an animal. You know, I can bail on this. And eventually, Colonel does.
Yeah.
Colonel just, like, stops listening and gets up and is like, fuck this shit. I'm out.
And he's just barely got a pass, too, because, you know, he's not an amphibian or a reptile. I think there's kind of like, no. I think there's kind of like, all right, go. We're going to do
I get the feeling he's going to be the token mammal.
The token
on that island, right? Like, probably good for the reptiles and stuff, because, you know, rats, like, get at snake eggs. But if you have, like, a good hunting dog, you can take the rats out.
That's true.
They can make that work.
That's true. Maybe he'll actually, like, become leader. later on. Like the frogs will, like the frogs will defer to his slightly larger brain.
And then, or at least can like pick them up and take them places like where they couldn't get without, you know, smashing through glass.
Oh,
like.
God. Anyway, that's it. The lights in the mansion go out. It's over. Jason's dead. Everybody's dead. Killed. At least
the frogs turn the lights off on the mansion.
Yes.
I don't think that point can be understated.
That's... Well, they just hopped up onto the light switch. It probably took them four or five tries, you know, to bounce up there and hit it just right. But yes, the frogs turned the lights out in the mansion. And that's it. And that's as close...
And they had shut the phones off earlier.
Well, that was one of those big... I think that was one of those big lizards.
Okay.
Chewed through the line. Anyway, this is as close as we get to seeing a frog actually kill a person until after the credits. Because after the credits, we see like an animated frog come onto screen with a human arm sticking out of its mouth, and it swallows it, and then hops away. Which is a strangely lighthearted stinger for this particular film. Very, very weird.
You know, Arkoff insisted on that.
Did he really?
Oh, well, no, I'm just
guessing they did. Well, because it echoes the poster.
Yeah, I put money on it.
Like, yeah, you're probably right.
There was someone in marketing who needed, like, we needed to have something like that.
Yeah, hate to piss off the people at the drive-in.
They have standards.
Alright, well, we'll be back in a minute to wrap up our discussion about frogs. Don't bugger off.
In a world gone mad.
As you know, the Doomsday Clock is a symbolic clock face analogizing humankind's proximity to extinction.
One man must fight to survive on the global junk heap of the future.
You maniacs! You blew it up! Damn you! God damn you all to hell!
Which versus the Doomsday Clock is that man's story? His search for entertainment is transmitted across time and space for your listening pleasure on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and your Android device.
This podcast is not fit for human consumption. Side effects include laughter, concern, nausea, vomiting, and blame from all artists. The producers accept no responsibility for any side effects, illness, or internet ranking, mind calls. My bank guarantee is worth nothing. Zero, zero, zilch, overall, no sausage. In short, you get nothing. Nothing. Good day, sir.
Welcome back to the Food Chain, and our discussion of frogs, well, it's about to croak. Gentlemen, any final thoughts on this movie?
I think this movie is really about, how we hate nature, and how we'll do anything to prevent ourselves from being uncomfortable. Nature knocks us off balance as human beings. We don't like to see a spider in the shower, because, you know, that son of a bitch must die if it's in the shower. We don't like to have a bee fly into the car. We don't like it when suddenly there's a wasp in the living room, you know? Even though, ostensibly, they were here first, and we're kind of in their way. I don't think that maybe they have that same sort of mindset. So that's one thing I really enjoy about this movie, is just that it's not... It's always been us versus them, and this is a good them versus us movie. One of the better ones, I think.
Here. There's a few reoccurring motifs in the film, specifically when Ray Milland's character is talking about his absolute adherence to his 4th of July / birthday, that this party that no one seems to want to go to has to happen every year at the same time in the same way, and it's always going to be like that. And he's going to will that into existence through force of will. But there's another line... early on when Pickett is first kind of introduced to them, and they're actually quite excited that he's an environmentalist and he knows something about animals. And it's an interesting bet because he's obviously supposed to be more of an advocate for the environment and the ecosystem. But everyone in this family is happy to see him because they expect that he's going to be able to give them good tips on how to kill everything.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's fairly polite about, like, kind of dodging that and simply says at one point that, you know, these things happen. There's more frogs this year. Population spike, and then everything normalizes. Next year, they'll be back to their proper state. And that almost would have been, I would have liked to have seen that line come up more, because it's almost like that's what's happening. It's like this family has pushed themselves into this environment to too much of a robust position, and that, like, everything around them has to smack them down and get them back into a reasonable level of right. control.
Right.
You know, it's almost like, not so much like nature's taking revenge, but it's like a call.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've outstripped your bounds, and you have to be just made reasonable again.
Some balance.
And Yeah, exactly. And you get a little bit of that early on in the film before, like, it goes balls out and all of nature is killing everybody. But the first few kills, there's always, like, even the dandy boy who gets poisoned in the greenhouse. And by the way, that's an incredible belt that man has.
Oh, my God.
I watching this is going to have me, like, scouring every vintage clothing store that I can find looking for something similar to that. That's going to be hanging over my head. But, you know, like, he's a fairly innocuous guy. He's, like, you know, one of the more, I use sympathetic members of the family, insofar as, you know, you get the feeling he knows his family's fucked. And he's kind of, like, playing along a little bit with it, but he's also quite dismissive of it. But when he's in his greenhouse, he picks, like, an aphid or something off of a flower and makes a comment about how that's going to be the last meal you get on this family's watch. And that's when the iguanas and monitor lizards start poisoning him. It's like, you know, up until that point, everyone does some unnecessary bit of killing before they get taken out. And eventually, like, the tipping point hits and just everyone's fair game. But that's just kind of a nice little bit of cosmic justice, I guess.
You know, we forgot to talk about the scene where they go into the dining room and there's a snake hanging from the chandelier. Now, there are obviously tools that you can use to get a snake off of the chandelier. You know, they're having a barbecue.
Like a stick?
A stick would be good. A barbecue fork, if you can get it in between the tines. You know, just something to move it from its position. Nope. For some reason, the wheelchair-bound guy has a pistol in his lap, and he just shoots it off of the chandelier. One shot. And then makes the butler take it away.
Yeah, and then insists that everyone sit down and eat.
Yes.
After he sprayed snake blood all over their dining room set.
And,
which is astounding. Like, maybe the rest of the film is them all of just, like, dying of horrible, like, salmonella-borne food poisoning.
Oh, God.
You know, snakes carry a lot of stuff you don't want to ingest.
No kidding.
It's interesting to me that Pickett didn't say during that scene, oh, for fuck's sake, let me go get a branch. You know?
Mm.
They stood there and screamed for about 30 seconds before Ramelan shot the thing. And, yeah, he did nothing. He was just like, huh, well, I guess maybe we should shoot this snake. I don't know.
The relationship between Pickett and Ramelan is actually really interesting in this.
Mm-hmm.
Because you would think, like, in a typical film, you would expect them to be at argumentative odds the entire time. But Milan sees him, you know, kind of like, at first, you know, you're trespassing on my property. I don't necessarily appreciate you, you know, trying to expose whatever you're trying to expose or whatever. But he's also like, you have information, you have knowledge that I could use. And they're immediately in this, like, strange sense of detente.
Yeah,
where it's very political and very pragmatic and kind of a skeezy kind of a way, like right out of the gate.
Yeah, because he wants him to gather information so that his family won't find out about it first.
Hmm. And Pickett's happy to do that.
Yeah. I guess he feels like he owes them some reason, I guess, for picking him up out of the swamp, even though they're the ones who dumped him over. Yeah, it is a very strange relationship. It's almost like he wants Pickett to believe that he's like the son that he never had, because all of his sons are terrible, wimpy people. But it never really gets that far. It's just like he's a mole. Pickett just becomes the mole for the family, who eventually also turns against Jason and gets the hell out of Dodge. Yeah, that's weird.
It's one of the things that's kind of interesting about the film. It's like it does suggest a lot of things that it doesn't actually deliver on, but that kind of makes it more compelling.
Yeah, I agree with that to an extent. I wish there had been, I don't know, I wanted more on-screen death. And that probably sounds terrible when I just say it like that, but these characters, for crying out, they just deserved everything they got, as far as I was concerned.
Oh, yeah.
Show me that! You know, it's like when you don't get to see Paul Reiser die in Aliens. He just goes, and then that's it. I'm like, no! This guy was a bastard!
All of the characters, eh? Yeah.
Right. Please, I want to see something come out the back of his skull. I need this for closure. And I just, you don't get it.
So, in a backwards kind of way, I think we're all very positive on this film. But in a strange way, are we kind of advocating, or not necessarily advocating, but would we not necessarily be adverse to a remake proposal?
If we can keep the CGI out of it, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, keep the nature footage.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that. What about you, Cutie? All right, then. She's like, you know what? It's a fucking bug movie. I don't know why we're going this deep.
No, I talked. Can you hear me now?
Yes, yes.
Jesus, fucking microphone. I don't know what's up with this. No, I said it depends on who they fucking cast, because, and like you, I don't want to see any fucking CGI, so, I don't know. Maybe.
So who
I'm always, like, my knee-jerk reaction is like, no fucking remakes, so.
Yeah, who would be the Sam Elliott in a remake of Frogs? Who would you cast?
That's the problem. It would have to be somebody you haven't heard of.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So maybe it's better to ask who you would cast as Jason, put in Ray Milland's part. Who's our angry old crusty actor at this point? J.K. Simmons? That would work.
I don't know who that is.
That could work. Yeah. I don't know. Okay, great. Well, we'd like a remake, but we don't know how to do it.
That's a little bit better than, like, we don't want a remake, we don't care who the hell is doing this.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Because the story is valid. The story is solid. It's just, you would have to do it right, and you'd have to not give us friggin' CGI cicadas or bats or anything like that. I want actors in real danger.
Yeah. And I love the idea, like you were saying, like that the frogs are kind of almost acting like judges. They're not really directly involved in the action. They're just sort of there observing and maybe coordinating everything. They're a great presence.
Yeah, they're a threat, but they're a vague threat, and they're a distraction threat, because the real danger is from everything but the frogs.
Yeah.
And that's, like, one of the things that I only, like, they, you know, there's a lot of, like, Foley animal sounds going through the whole thing, But I almost would have liked if they had gone like full bullfrog croaking, like Oni Baba, through the whole thing.
Right.
It's just like a constant, like a background hum the whole time. You just can't escape it, like to the point where it becomes a little bit like white noise, and every time, you know, every now and again, it like creeps up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I like that idea a lot. Really
crazy, ominous. Yeah.
Cool. Do you have any final words on this, Cootie?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, shit, that's probably going to wrap it up then, Al. It's been excellent having you on this show as opposed to, you know, the other show. Any show, really, with you is pretty much a blast. So, if you would, tell everyone about your restaurant and any special events that you may have coming up.
Well, I'm the owner-operator of Picnic. We're a restaurant in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. We're an adjunct to an art gallery, so all of our menus are sort of influenced by the art that is being shown on display. Currently, we have a show based on... it's called The Year of the Fire Rooster and Other Incredible Feats of the Occult. And so everything's kind of inspired by the Chinese Zodiac. And so that's going to be running for the next couple of weeks. And goodness knows what's going to be following up after that.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
It's a good time. It's a good time. There's some really great pieces up right now.
I also think it's interesting that so far as we've been recording the show, we've only had one American guest. So...
How did you do that?
I don't know. Just magics, I guess? I don't know. It's just been kind of cool.
What a time to be alive.
Right?
Right?
Yeah.
The internet is a beautiful thing.
Indeed.
Got its upside.
Well, you can listen to all three of us on our sister show, Kiss the Goat. It is all about satanic cinema from the last 50 years. Devil movies, bad decisions, and fine dining, thanks to Chef Al. That's Kiss the Goat, also right here on Legion Podcasts.
No, you can visit the Kiss the Goat website and buy some wrapping paper, which seems to be one of our most popular items. Which is interesting. And you can also visit my website, which is elderskeep.com, to buy my books, read my blog, and other stuff having to do with me. Me.
Leave us a review on iTunes, guys. Tell everybody how awesome the show is. And send some greeting cards to our parents. They love that. You know, throw money.
Yes,
do something.
Throw money. Throw money is good.
Yes.
And... that's going to do it for this episode. On behalf of Chef Alan Cootie, my name is X, and we will see you next time at the bottom of the food chain.
But if you ever go back in the woody swamp way, you better not go at night. There's things out there in the middle of them woods that make a strong man die for pride. Things that crawl and things that fly. And they say the ghost of Lucius Clay gets up and he walks around, but I couldn't believe it. I just had to find out for myself, and I couldn't conceive it, 'cause I never would listen to nobody else, and I couldn't believe it. I just had to find out for myself. There's some things in this world you just can't explain.